Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 20 for December 13th, 2009. Boggled by Goggles. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/TWiG. And by the new voice-activated Sync, featuring hands-free calling, music search, and turn-by-turn navigation. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Google. We're going to talk about Google and the cloud today with three wonderful people, starting off, of course, with Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org, founder of Lifehacker and the author of the fabulous new book, Google Wave Guide, the complete guide to Google Wave at CompleteWaveGuide.com.
You got it. Greetings, humans.
Greetings, humans. She is not one of us, but we can only aspire to be one of her. Jeff Jarvis is also here. He is the man behind the Buzz Machine at BuzzMachine.com, professor of journalism at the Graduate School of Journalism at City University of New York, and a podcaster himself. His Guardian podcast is called
Media Talk USA.
Media Talk USA. And today, joining us from the Googleplex, Mr. Brian Fitzpatrick. Brian is the guy, one of the guys from the Data Liberation Front, which we've talked about before, but I thought it'd be great to get him on and talk in more detail about what DLF is all about. Brian, it's great to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. When did you start working for Google, and what did you start doing when you started at Google?
I started in 2005, I was asked to move to Mountain View, and I respectfully declined to do so because I'm a big fan of staying in Chicago. And so I started off working on Google Code, actually, a project hosting feature.
Which we're very familiar with, especially Gina, of course. That's neat. And you're still in Chicago?
Still in Chicago. It was used to be me and 45 salespeople here, and now it's...
One developer and 45 salespeople. That's about right. The right ratio, I think.
That's a bad ratio.
Only for the developer.
We're doing a lot better now. We're up almost 100 engineers and about 300 salespeople, so wow. The odds are a lot better, I'd say.
Yeah, you can fight them off. If they should turn into zombies, you'll be okay.
I don't know. 300 zombies sounds a little scary.
You got to be able to barricade that door. I just start planning now, just in case. All right. So what is the idea behind the Data Liberation Front?
Well, the idea is that we're coming into a sort of, there's a big paradigm shift in general. You're not storing data on your computer or your laptop so much anymore as you're storing it on the internet, in the cloud. And I think that it's a big shift for some people, and some people feel more comfortable with it. Some people feel less comfortable with it, and we want people to trust us with their data. And so, if we're gonna do that, I think it's important that you can get your data out again. That it's easy to be able to take your data with you and maybe go somewhere else if you decide to. And I think people in general just don't think about that so much when they're putting their data in. They only think about it when something happens, whether it's extended downtime or they find a better product somewhere or something to that extent, and they want to take their data out. Only then do they really look and see.
Did this come from where did the initiative come from? Was it from the ground up? Was it from you guys, or was it from the front office who said, Ryan, we've got to do this?
No, it was definitely the ground up. I was sitting around talking with some other engineers, and even before I came to Google, I often heard Eric Schmidt talk about the fact that we don't lock our users in. Right. He ended his talks with it for years, and we realized that we were looking through some of our products, and while it's true you could get your data out, sometimes it was a little bit of a pain in the butt. It took you a long time, or it was a matter of jumping through hoops, or paste in something into the URI bar and then add a number to the end, et cetera. And while that's, you know, if APIs and that sort of thing are accessible to engineers and that sort of thing, but we needed something we thought that was more accessible to your average user.
So is it something new or just exposing something that was already there?
We started about 2 years ago, actually, working with on iGoogle. Our first engineer working on the project came from the iGoogle team, so it was a logical place to sort of get our feet wet. And then we moved to Blogger, and then Google Docs was our real big launch last month. We've done Google Sites, Notebook, Finance, and then other products are actually starting to do it themselves as well, and we're really happy to see that, because obviously we can't keep going to every product and doing it for them.
Yeah, you guys, if you've got any questions, it looks like we lost Gina. I'll bring Gina back in. But Jeff, if you've got a question at all,
yeah, well, you know, I just see an opportunity here. I wish there were a business, someone out there would start a business that would make it easy for me to back up my entire cloud.
Oh.
Right, that used the API for the data liberation front and used whatever Facebook has or hasn't, and what Gina's doing
with
Twitter.
Wouldn't that be great?
Wouldn't it be great that I know that my life is being stored somewhere,
yeah,
off of all of those places in some standard formatted way. So that's just a wish for somebody to go make billions of dollars on the idea.
You know, there are a lot of these online backup services. We just interviewed Ubuntu One. You know, Microsoft has theirs. There's a lot of commercial services. That's a you're right. I think that's a natural. It's a great opportunity.
So does the DLF end up becoming part of standard setting for the whole idea of data freedom and backup?
Well, with regard to standards, we're making sure that we use existing standards and open formats, because we don't want to get sort of down the rat hole of defining formats or anything proprietary, that sort of thing, because, you know, you can actually have a copy of your data in proprietary format and not be able to access it. So we're hoping that just what we're doing is something that other companies pick up on and see the importance of doing it just for users in general. It seems like, if you look back to 10 years ago, you'd have to go buy a piece of software at a store in a box on a floppy. You were talking about, you know, 5 1/4 inch floppies in your last show, and you take it home and install it. And that was a high barrier to entry. Nowadays, if you want to try a piece of software, it's just a matter of typing a URL in. So, with that ability to switch so easily and try out other software, I think trust is coming into the picture much more than it has in the past. And so I see this sort of as a contributory measure to making sure that users still trust us.
Seems like a good marketing move, but what are you going to say? It's a good idea from a point of view of marketing, and as long as you walk the walk, doesn't really matter if you're just saying it for marketing or PR purposes or not. You get the sense there's a serious commitment to not only doing this now, but an ongoing commitment that every time there's a new product from Google, that there will be an interface, there will be an API, there will be access to the data.
Absolutely. And it's even going beyond the API to a point where it's easy our sort of end goal is like click a button and take everything with you. So there's a big launch, as you guys said, but there's a bunch of launches this week. One thing we launched is a one-click button to take all your docs and spreadsheets out of Google Docs. Also, all your documents, you can sort of roll them up into a format that you choose and give them to you as a zip file.
That's cool. That's really great.
That's great.
Yeah, that's a useful.
Is there a kind of set of principles about this that's emerging and best practices that are emerging that if, you know, we take the list that you have and go to Facebook and say, we want that?
Well, so, I mean, on a very high level, there's three questions that we sort of say that you should ask before you're putting your data into any sort of cloud product. The first question is, can I get my data out at all? And the second question is, how much is it going to cost to get the data out? And the last one is, how much of my time is it going to take to get it out? So if you can't get it out at all, it's a non-starter.
Right.
If it's going to cost you extra, we'd say that, you know, we don't think everything needs to be free. If you're paying $10 a month or a year for a service, then that should include the ability to get your data out. And lastly, how much time? Again, going back to the Docs example, you know, my wife and I use Google Docs a lot to collaborate on stuff, and we have 200-300 docs. And if I had to get all those out one at a time by clicking through the export process, that's going to take me a whole afternoon. It might as well be locked in.
Right, right. That's a really good point. We're in that same boat. We use it all the time.
Wait, I got to ask. Do you and your wife collaborate on software or on life?
It's shopping lists, to-do lists.
Yes.
Who's going to pick up the kids?
We've got a definitely not collaborating on writing software. We've got a 100-year-old house here in the city that we've been in the process of restoring.
And oh, neat.
There's a whole lot of stuff to track on that.
Brian, I have a question for you. I'm one of these crazy people who once a month I go in and I pop all of my Gmail locally so that I have all my mail kind of saved onto my hard drive. And I actually have like a calendar reminder for a while. I had this sort of cron job running, but I didn't want to keep my computer on all the time. So now like by hand, I launch Thunderbird and download all my Gmail, right? Because I feel like if I'm locked out of my Gmail account, I at least want to have my archives on my hard drive. But sure. I'm crazy and I don't think a lot of people do that. So I'm curious to know if you back up your Gmail and or export your Gmail in any way and how you do it.
Well, I don't think that's crazy at all, actually. I mean, interesting note, when we first launched the Blogger Day Liberation, we started seeing users downloading their entire blog every week. And we were trying to figure out what was going on here, but we finally figured out it was exactly what you're talking about. People were backing up their blogs locally because they felt more comfortable. You know, I liken it to flying in an airplane. It's arguably safer than driving in your car, especially in Chicago. But most people tend to feel a little less safe in airplanes. They tend to be more tentative about flying on a plane. I think the same applies in general to cloud-based computing. So anything that you have, the lockout example is a great example most people don't think about. But anything you have in our clusters is going to be stored, you know, multiple times across multiple data centers and that sort of thing. And again, one of my goals, so in particular, friends of mine who take a lot of digital photos, their kids, that sort of thing. I always tell them, for the sake of heaven, back up your pictures. You know, I know somebody lost a hard drive, lost the first 3 years of their children's photos.
Horrible.
And I think I'm on a crusade, I guess, to get people to think about that and about data liberation to some extent. And the analogy that I like to use is, you know, if you're living in whatever, you know, insert your city here, and You had a nice apartment, but you find a nicer apartment that's bigger, better view with a better price. And you call your landlord and you say, you know, look, I'm going to end my lease in 2 months when it ends, not going to renew. Just wanted to let you know I'm going to need my security deposit back. And the landlord says, that's fine, no problem. But when you move out, you can't take any of your photos or your clothing or your furniture or that sort of thing, right?
Your cat.
And so that's sort of, yeah, your cat. I don't know if they want the cat too.
No, I don't think they want the cat.
In any case.
That's
so
really
are
great.
There requirements in place? Like when you start to build a new product at Google, is export an initial consideration on the requirements list, or is it something that sort of gets patched on later? It seems like things are getting the ability to export like docs kind of later on. I mean, is the data liberation part of the initial product specification process now?
Well, docs already had, you know, exportability. It wasn't, you know, what we would call as liberated as we'd like it. It wasn't as easy as it could be. Right. We're hearing more from products earlier on. They want to talk to us a little bit about what we think is better for them to do. They're just looking for advice and, you know, wanting to basically sort of, you know, get a thumbs up on the data liberation side. It's not always the kind of thing that teams are thinking about in depth at the beginning of their product because things are so fluid. You don't want to actually typically wind up writing any code to liberate your product until you sort of have a good idea of what your product is and what your data is going to be like.
Right, that makes sense.
But I mean, it's definitely something that's interesting. I've had, you know, we've had different products call us up and say, you know, hey, we've looked at dayliberation.org. We think our product needs to be easier. What can we do? What would make you guys, the Day Liberation front, happy to do that?
So are you a skunk works within Google? I mean, how is it treated within Google? The Data Liberation front doesn't sound like, you know, you're part of the company. You even don't even have a Google address.
Well, that's what happens when you let me name the product. No, I'm kidding. we actually had a whole bunch of discussion about what we'd name our team when we first started because it wasn't Skunkworks. We did get some actual headcount from, you know, and the ability. We said we want to try this out. You know, we'd like some headcount to try it. And, you know, we went ahead and did this, but we were just sort of an internal team helping out other engineering teams. But back to the name, we couldn't figure out what we were going to name ourselves. So in sort of that bickering Monty Python, Life of Brian thing, we wound up at the Data Liberation Front because We figured either the front of Day Liberation or the people's front of Day Liberation.
It says something,
The reason we chose the website and the sort of somewhat subversive logo is because we think, A, dayliberation.org, we want this to be seen as more of a general movement, not necessarily just Google, but we'd love to see more of it across the internet. But B, it's for a big company to do this sort of thing, we think is rather subversive. Although within Google, everybody I tell, this is what we're doing. They're like, oh, yeah, of course. That makes complete sense. It's exactly what the right thing to do is.
Go ahead, Leo.
You have a Twitter account, and do people give you requests for use this to say, hey, can you liberate this data? Can you liberate that data?
We do, actually. We get people ask us questions. People mention stuff to us. Oh, you found the photo.
There they are. They look a little scary in the uniforms.
Very Civil War. But we set up a Google moderator page for people to put up, things that they want to see better liberated and questions. And one of my favorite things is every once in a while we'll get somebody on the moderator page will ask us to liberate a product that isn't even our own.
Please, free this product.
That is an interesting thing to start to set up, maybe a new independent organization that does become kind of an arbiter of what it means for data to be liberated.
And that is one of the things that we are talking about is what is it, because it gets kind of, I don't even want to go into the legal aspects of data ownership, especially when more than one person's working on a document. I'll leave that to the copyright lawyers. But to think about data from a control point of view, if you write a document and you put it in Google Docs, arguably you should be able to do what you want with that. If I send you an email, arguably you have a copy of that. You should be able to do what you want with it. But what if you and I collaborate on a document? How much of that is quote unquote my data?
Well, that leads to my next question, which is WAVE.
Right.
A, is it exportable now? And B, for the reasons you just mentioned, and also for the kind of data issues, you have something that's an entirely new format, an entirely new way to record collaboration. In what form do you export it? Gina, have you tried?
Exactly.
There's an early bot, an exporty bot that can apparently publish a WAVE to HTML, but it only works in the sandbox, and things are still really early. Brian probably knows better than I do.
Well, we've actually talked to the WAVE team for quite a while now, since the first time I saw WAVE demo, which was a long time ago, and they're very interested in doing the right thing as far as they're open sourcing, they're federating, et cetera, and the ability to export your WAVEs in some sort of format is definitely something they're interested in doing.
You have a Google moderator page where people can vote or suggest, I guess, which products should be liberated, I guess. Is that the way to say it? I guess it
is. Absolutely.
Yeah. And 2,768 people have participated. 15,000 total votes. That's fantastic. There's obviously...
Have you learned anything new there? Things that you hadn't thought of in liberation terms?
Well, one of the things we're sort of... One of the things that comes up often, a lot of the things we get are people actually wanting new features. They want to they'll ask for, I'd like this, be able to put this type of data in here, into there, that sort of thing. But, it sort of brings things to the forefront of what's of our attention. We know what people are more concerned about or more thinking about with regard to liberation.
It's not always backup either. I mean, I notice here somebody saying, we want an API for Google Moderator. When people see liberate, it's not just data.
Right.
Is that part of your mission, or do you stick with the data side?
Well, I mean, we try to leave a trail of APIs in our wake. I mean, we really do stand on the shoulders of giants. Insofar as the Google data, the GData team, they've been working on APIs for years and years, and they're sort of quietly in the background opening up all these products to developers, and we've sort of taken that and wrapped that up all in a nice neat package and given a nice HTML button or something to that effect.
So it's kind of part of the API, solution.
Yeah, I mean, and if we encounter a product that doesn't have APIs, obviously APIs are step one, and the liberation is step two.
Right, right. That's great. Well, we're really glad you could come and explain it, guys. You got any other questions for Brian before we let him go? We're just glad you're doing it.
Yeah, well, yeah, I'm really glad this is happening. I still have a nagging feeling that like exportation isn't quite enough. I mean, I wish that my cloud data could just sort of seamlessly and automatically sync to my local machines in the background without me having to worry about it. But that may be going sort of beyond. I mean, that's going beyond
well,
the ability
no, we
to
can
say,
ask
pick
for
up
that.
My stuff and go.
We can ask I mean, for I, that. You're saying instead of exportation, we want integration.
I mean, because I hear that. From people all the time who say, I'm locked out of my Gmail account and I can't get in and I'm screwed and, right. and you know, or whatever. Either lockout is usually the issue or, you know, I think lockout is probably the thing that that most people are concerned about, especially for free services where it's hard to get someone on the phone or, you know, that kind
so
of thing.
So it's not backup, it's sync. I like that as a concept.
Yes. Yeah.
I
don't think that's an unusual thing to ask for either. I mean, I think there's a... I think this is sort of step one, and we're you know there's a lot of different ways we can go with data liberation in the future. But I mean, I think that the simple thing to say is that you know closed data, lack of integration, you know, walled gardens are not sort of the way of the future, and it's not where it's going to be. And the real interesting thing happens when you have more access to your data, things are more transparent, you have more control, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're all for that.
Yep, definitely. Glad that you all are doing what you're doing. That's for sure. I love to hear about.
And I'm glad
being able to pick up a move if I want.
Yeah, and that the company's supporting that. It's unusual. It's really kind of unheard of that a company would support that. And it's part of the openness that I really like about Google.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the not evil part of Google. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate it, Brian.
My pleasure.
Take care.
Brian
Fitzpatrick.
Thanks.
DataLiberationFront.org.
DataLiberation.org.
I'm sorry, DataLiberation.org. Hey, where can we get those cool uniforms?
I don't know about the uniforms, but we got some stickers. We could definitely set you up with some laptop stickers.
The fist stickers? That's good.
Yeah.
Oops, I hung up on them by accident. Now we'll never know where to get those stickers. Oh, man. My finger's on the button. I made the fist and he went away. I'm sorry. I apologize. Well, I'll email him and maybe we can find out.
Now he thinks you're mad.
Stickers! Screw you! I don't want no stickers.
I want the damn uniform. I told you that.
I want the uniform.
My uniform.
It's a little creepy. Did you see the uniform? It's on their Flickr page, or you can follow.
It's cool.
It's a little weird. It's a mix between Devo meets the 1984 commercial from Apple. It's a very very strange. But I'm glad. I'm really glad Google's doing it, and I wanted to give them a little extra plug for doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And continue to urge them to, you know, to keep their eye on that. Moving on in just a bit with some of the other big stories in the Googleverse, and there are quite a few of them. They released about 80 tools this week. It was a big week for Google. Before we do that, though, I would like to mention our friends at Citrix, the makers of GoToAssist Express. If you're a programmer or a support person, if you've got IT chores that you need to do, you need GoToAssist. This is a really fantastic product I'd like you to try out from the folks at Citrix. They're kind of the experts on remote access, and they've taken their remote access platform and made an IT support platform that is second to none with some great features. Things like the ability to do 8 sessions at once, unattended sessions. I don't have to tell you why you'd want 8 sessions at once. I mean, it's really nice to be able to start a scan or a backup and then move on to the next computer without having to wait around for the first one to finish. It also does a survey of what software is running, what the operating system is, what security software is running in the background. Very useful. You can drag and drop files from your computer to the remote computer. It works PC to PC, Mac to PC, Mac to Mac, PC to Mac. And it's just about as easy to install as you would expect from the folks at Citrix. Try it right now for 30 days, absolutely free. That's right, free. Go to GoToAssist.com/Twig, GoToAssist.com/Twig, and give it a try. I've used it for, I think we started using it at the beginning of the decade with the screensavers, and it's just been a great boon to us. GoToAssist.com/Twig. We thank them for their support of This Week in Google. I want to go back a little bit to a story that we did and was changed immediately after the show came out, and that's the Etherpad story.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Minutes after, as soon as we got off,
yeah,
it all changed.
Yep. Yeah. And so we mentioned last week that Google had acquired Etherpad and really, fumbled.
Flubbed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the word, the F word I was looking for. Flubbed the transition by just turning it off. And I know, Gina, you were upset. A lot of programmers who use Etherpad were upset. What happened?
They did a complete 360.
Yay!
Yeah, which is great. They listened to the users. I was impressed. They reopened Etherpad. You can now create new pads. And they promised that they will keep it open until all of the source is open source and can live on in other ways. So at least until it's open source. So I was pretty impressed. They should have done this to begin with. I mean, at this point, Google has acquired enough products, I think.
They should have known, yeah.
How it works. They should have known. But still, kudos for the quick turnaround. I mean, I think this was like a Thursday to Saturday 360. So
Lars is cool. Was great. Good. Did you hear that?
No,
Lars Rasmussen. I forget where he was, yeah. But he just said, "What were we thinking?"
That's the way to handle it. That's just that's so great. That's just the way to handle it. Is just say, you know, we made a mistake. Sorry. Well, and then to fix it. Now there has been some skepticism of the opening it up claim. Like, well, we'll believe that when we see it. Do you think that that's something that you know have they have a bad history of that, Gina? I don't know, but.
Well, I mean, they're integrating into the Wave team, and the Wave source code is open. I don't see why it would be an issue. I think there was an issue with maybe some of the libraries that they're using not being open source. There might be some licensing issues, but I mean, I don't have any reason to think that they wouldn't do it. I mean, the Wave team really is
good.
You know, one of the most open products they have. So
yeah, it's good. Well, and I'm just opening it up again because people were just really missing the functionality. I think it was just a really smooth way to handle it.
Yeah.
Yep. So we just wanted to correct ourselves. It's just sometimes that happens. You cover something, and we're 1 week between shows. We don't have any way to kind of update an audio show in the middle. So I guess I could have come on and said, never mind, they fixed it. And
I wasn't writing this blog post while we were talking.
I know. It's so funny. And they must have been. They must have been. Maybe they were listening to us and said, whoops.
That's right.
Yeah. Whoops. Yeah. You know,
Twig says it, we got to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I swear they've been listening to us because last week I was complaining that Google Wave doesn't have Control Z undo and redo, and right. that got it added in this week. So I think we've got somebody's ear.
We have a bully pulpit. Let's use it. What do we want to fix? Let's fix it.
So, Leo.
Yes.
I just got a tweet from Brad Davis Seal who says that the company that I imagined only minutes ago exists.
This is how powerful we are.
Isn't it great? Look, I wish this happens and it occurs. So it's, I just went to the site. It's called Backupify, BackUpify, and it says that it supports backups of Twitter, WordPress, Google Docs, Gmail, Facebook, Zoho, Delicious, Flickr, Basecamp, PhotoBucket, and more.
Wow. I mean, you couldn't back up everything, but the fact that it backs up those big names.
You can back up today.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a neat idea. I'm sure it doesn't operate as smoothly as it could if there were cooperation from those companies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe these all have APIs. So let's see. It's free Twitter backup. Of course, Gina, you've been doing that for a while. Basic comes with 2 gigabytes of storage. Yeah, you're going to be spending $5 a month for 10 gigabytes or $15 a month for 50 gigabytes.
So, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, but it's a great idea. Yeah.
Start, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's, but I think it's interesting that he talked about integration, and you talked about integration, Jeff. I think it really is got to be, it has to be more than just getting a lump.
That was kudos to Gina. That was Gina.
Yeah.
I think that's not right. Because otherwise, you're going to back up the backup to back up the backup.
Right.
And then when you actually eat it, it's like having an old, as you said earlier, 5.5-inch disk. What the hell do you do with it?
I think the next generation of all of this stuff, I've always bugged me that we create all these little silos, and the next generation really has to take a look at integrating it all across platforms so we don't just have, I mean, it's okay for a Twitter to exist, for an individual vendor to do it, but it's not okay for it to be a data silo. It has to interoperate somehow.
Well, what Gina really said, I think, is the import of this is that you have to have not only the right to your data, but the right to a player for your data.
Yes.
Right, just having the VHS tape is no good if you don't have a VHS machine. So just having your Gmail is no good if nothing else can read it.
But I'm even thinking, you know, I'm pumping a lot of content into a variety of places, just use Facebook and Twitter. There needs to be some way of, I guess we're getting there, of kind of interoperating between them so that you can have a presence in one place, I can have a presence in another place, and we can follow each other even across, it's federation is what it's called, even across these different silos. So it's not merely for backup and play, but but it's even while we're doing it,
current
even all the time. Yeah. And that's a, right. I know it's a thorny one, and I know that we're a long way from solving it, but I would hope that that's kind of the Web 3.0, the next generation of it, as we figure out a way to do it. Do you see the – now, I would like to know your this is the Kremlinology here. We've been talking in the past about whether Google has a phone or not. You know, and there's a blog post.
The story that will not die.
Yeah. The Times now says that Google appears closer to releasing its own phone. This is in the Bits blog on December 12th. Google employees, according to the Times, this is Miguel Helft writing in the Times, who asked not to be identified, confirmed recently the company was indeed helping to develop new hardware and software for Android phones. They said the project wouldn't alienate allies. On Friday, Google began distributing new phones to employees who began tweeting about them. Some of them refer to the device as the new Google phone. And on Saturday, today, Google confirmed that it's testing a new concept in mobile phones. I don't know. The blog, here's the criminology. The blog post says it's, well, I'll read you. We recently came up with a concept of a mobile lab, which is a device, a mobile lab, which is a device that combines innovative hardware from a partner with software that runs on Android to experiment with new mobile features and capabilities. We shared this device with Google employees across the globe. This means they got to test out a new technology and help improvement. Unfortunately, because dog fooding is a process exclusively for Google employees, we cannot share specific product details. And that's where the Kremlin shut up. So
this Leo, is where you ought to have one of those things that changes your voice and puts a black mark on the face.
We've been your
I don't think that you can read this. Now, here's where we go in interpretation and say, oh, Google's doing a device themselves. I mean, they're just testing stuff, right?
But they are trying to taunt us here.
Yes.
With the idea that they have something that is otherworldly, and it almost strikes me as a kind of Apple-like game. Of saying, you will believe what we have next. We're not telling you, but oh, where do you see it?
So now TechCrunch is saying, this is an HTC device, which is unlocked, an unlocked HTC GSM phone.
God bless
them. The Passion?
Really? The Passion? Really? Will it come out on Easter?
Yeah.
I was thinking something else, Leo, but...
early January, not Valentine's Day or Easter.
The Passion. And, well, that's interesting. So, so it's not a Google phone. It's just another provider doing another phone. But it is Android 2.1, right?
It's Android 2.1. It's not specific to any carrier. So they're going to release it. It's unlocked. So you can pop a SIM card into it, which I'm
loving.
And Google has a hand in the hardware development as well. They are working with HTC. It's completely Google branded. So there's no HTC branding. But that doesn't make sense because it's called the Passion. And that doesn't strike me as a name that Google would have chosen.
No, that's an HTC name. They like that kind of stuff. They get the Hero and the Touch. And that's an HTC name.
I love this too. It's becoming Google's monomaniacal fetishism toward fast. The TechCrunch piece says the phone is, quote, really, really fast, says someone who's seen it in action.
Well, it should be, because that's the knock on the G1 was it was really, really slow, and that must have really annoyed Google. But now that the Droid and the Aris are out, and these are pretty snappy little devices.
Well, here's the other little trick here. It says it has a camera that is, quote, weirdly large for a phone. But if you put that together with the other thing that came out this week, which is Google Goggles.
Oh, yes.
I've seen Schmidt talk about this at the Foursquare
conference. What the hell is Google Goggles?
You can point the camera of the phone to an object, a place, or I've heard from certain people soon, a face of a person, and that becomes your search query.
What?
This is awesome, by the way.
What? So you're scanning a face?
Well, okay. So it's an Android application, and right now facial recognition is not supported. But at they did the search event at the Computer History Museum this week, and a reporter asked, "What about facial recognition?" So it supports logos, book covers, DVDs, landmarks, and objects. So you take a picture, it scans the object, and it identifies what it is and returns Google search results for it. And someone asked, what about faces? You know, because Picasa and Picasa Web have facial recognition. So ostensibly, you know, it wouldn't be that big of a stretch that you could point your camera phone at somebody's face and get Google search results. And they said that faces are objects which can be recognized, but that they did not turn that on because of privacy issues. They need to work out the privacy issues.
Man. Well, I think we're very...
I've heard from another executive that it is imminent that they can do that.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary, the idea that you could be in a room with someone, snap a photo of a stranger from across the room, and get Google search results before you even speak to that person. I mean, without knowing their name. I mean, it makes sense, but it's also a little creepy.
I want this. You know what I really want? And and every old person has always wanted
exactly.
this.
Exactly. It's memory time.
You know where I'm going, Jeff. I want a little earpiece in my ear, a little earbud in there. I want a little camera on my lapel, and it just goes, and that's Jeff Jarvis. His son is named Jake. His birthday is on November. And then, you know, and that would be so cool.
Yeah.
Like the Queen. The Queen has that, but it's a human.
Well, now let's tie it together with another thing from Google this week, which is putting the QR codes on 1,000 favorite places.
Yeah.
So you have the physical code on a business or a place. You take a picture of that with your iPhone, and that again becomes a search query, and you find out about that place.
Do you get the feeling Google is just, yes, it's so perfectly positioned to do this stuff. The opportunity for this company is limitless.
So now you start to see what goes beyond this notion of the quaint old phone.
Yeah.
Right. So this device is not only making you constantly, perpetually connected to the world, it's also connecting the world to it, right? It becomes your world connection device, that what you see and experience can come back through and populate not only search queries, but your own personal data, you know, Foursquare, like, where have I been? What have I done? What do I want to know about this? What can I say about this?
It's so
that becomes really powerful.
So freaking cool.
It's kind of crazy. But the barcode and the window thing, I don't know. My first reaction was like, am I really going to scan a barcode on a coffee shop window? I mean, of course I will to try it out. I will. But will most people do that?
What if you go to a restaurant and you can scan through the barcode or through just now a picture, and you get all the reviews right off the bat?
Oh, no. I was in Paris? In Paris, you see on the posters everywhere the QR codes on the corner.
Ah.
So, I mean...
You're so worldly, Leo.
Well, when I was in Paris, this was a year ago. So, I think that, you know, a lot of phones, maybe European phones, have the QR capability, you know, or at least software for it. I know you can get Android, can get something. iPhone can get something that will read those. It is a lot easier. I mean... Aren't we already? Maybe you don't do this, but I do this. Taking pictures of stuff on my phone to remember it, a flower, I use Evernote that
spot.
Way. Parking spot. If you were on, I could easily see you're on a subway train and you see an ad and you take a picture of the ad. How much better to just do the QR code and you get all the information in there? I think that's kind of natural.
I think you're right too, though. Is that at some point GPS does it for you? Right, I mean, that's the force.
Or goggles.
Thing. I'm here.
Right.
Or goggles.
And I don't
goggles.
Need to
yeah. See, that's
right.
why.
That's the
I
thing.
Mean,
if I'm standing in front of the place already, I'm more likely to just browse the menu, you know, in the window versus take out my phone and scan a barcode. But on posters in the subway, this makes a lot of sense to me for sure.
So I can download goggles now.
Yeah, it's in the market. It's an Android market. It's Android only.
I'll be with you
which
later.
Which made a lot of iPhone owners not happy. So, you know, I wrote this blog post this week that all the best Android apps are made by Google at this point.
I think you're right.
I think. Except for, like, Amazon MP3. But that got a lot of people a little upset. But, I mean, everything else is either on par with what's available for the iPhone or less so.
Well, this is the Google kind of way, is do it yourself. That's why I kind of credit the Google phone. Because you get the feeling, I don't know what's going on internally, but you get the feeling they get fed up. And they just say, screw it. I'm just going to do it ourselves.
Right. And they're using their own applications to differentiate Android from the iPhone OS. I mean, the Google Maps on Android is just way better than the iPhone at this point. And that's a really good killer app for your mobile phone. You want good maps. So,
well, we've also learned from the Google ROMs fiasco that those proprietary applications that Google owns and doesn't let you... you know, distribute yourself.
are closed source. Yes.
Those are closed source. And it may be that that's another way of kind of controlling a little bit the environment.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I do sense we're on the cusp of something that's the next device. I argued that when the iPhone came out, they actually should have released it first as the iPod Touch and as a computer that you had, and then added and said, oh, guess what? We just added a phone to it.
Right.
It's a computer that, oh, yeah, we put a phone in.
Well, they were in a bigger hurry than that.
Right. And I get that. But I think in this case, you want to try to push people's minds past the idea of just what a mere phone is.
Yeah.
By the way, when they announced the QR thing, I went on and they had pictures of the places with the QR codes on the web. So I took a picture of the QR code with my iPhone right off the screen. Uh-huh. And I kept getting the wrong place.
Uh-oh.
And so I tweeted that, and God bless, somebody from the QR team at Google, the Places team at Google, tweeted back to me or emailed me back and said, PR person just sent this to me. What's the problem? And then I guess the resolution on the QR code, if you take it off a screen, is just that much off that it was going someplace else on the list.
Oh, that's interesting.
Hmm.
I think QR is an intermediate step that really the thing should be smart enough not to have to look for some code, just to go, oh, I get it.
Precisely.
Somebody said they pointed goggles at the screen, the video stream that we sent, and Google sent them to Twit on the search page.
Really?
That's fantastic. How smart can this be?
It may have seen the logo. It's really good with logos.
Must have seen the logo.
Yeah, yeah. It's quite good with logos, actually.
That's kind of spooky. I love it, though. I mean, basically, this is what you want. You want... that's what search really is, ultimately, is tell me what's going on. What's that mean?
Right, so we go through this whole thing about static search now becoming live search. Now you get truly place-based and object-based search. Object being a place or a person.
Wow. I'm just boggled by goggles. This is just, that's really
is that
amazing.
The title of the show this
week,
perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. Let me write that down.
I think you just did it. I saw your reflex there to write it down so you don't forget about it. That's what the new phone will do for you.
Well, yeah, exactly. No, I have the chat. Well, see, I have had the chat room to do this for me for a long time. I will just, at the end of the show, I'll say, what was that title? And they'll say, Boggled for Goggles. So I actually have people for that. There's about 600 or 700 people who are watching at all times.
Nice. Crowdsourcing.
They're my brain. It's great.
I love it.
So I have a little sense of how cool this would be. And I don't think I think it's going to be all-time real-time. Just, you know. That Gordon Bell's idea of you wear the camera around your neck and it's recording everything that you do all the time. Well, why shouldn't that camera also be giving you information about stuff you're looking at? I'm just very excited about this whole idea. More from Google coming up in just a second. This was the week that, I don't know, we might look back on this week and say this is when Google kind of just took off. How many announcements did they have? It felt like a dozen.
Well, yeah, if you go to their official Google blog and it has this week in search, this week in that, there's just four or five things in all of them.
It's just amazing. And by the way, thank you for stealing this weekend. I appreciate it, Google. We still have this week in Google, though. See, they can have all those others, but we have this week in Google. We own this week.
Here's the other really neat announcement that I love.
Save it.
Oh, save it. Okay.
Because that's called a tease. It's called a very brutal, abrupt tease, but
it was so subtle, I didn't even get it. That's how smooth you are.
You know, we've got more things to talk about in a moment, but right now I'd like to talk to you about my Ford. And the Ford Sync, the mighty, mighty Ford Sync. I have a video on here. I'll show you. I'm going to take more videos of it because people don't believe me when I say that my car understands what I'm saying. It's like Google goggles for your car is what it is. You're talking to your car. It's like having Hal in here. Sync is the hands-free calling, music search, turn-by-turn navigation, information search built into Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. It has, you know, you press a button in your steering wheels. You don't have to take your eyes off the window because it's not the screen. It's talking to you. There is a little screen, but it's not about what's on the screen. So when you ask for directions, it walks you through the directions. It tells you what the traffic is going to be. You can get sports scores. I can tell it things like I press a button. I say climate. And I can tell it what temperature to make the car. I can go on and on. It can give you vehicle health reports. You get a website, syncmyride.com, that you can go to and get all this information about your car. You can also get updates because every Ford Sync vehicle has a USB port. So you can take a thumb drive, download software on the website, and bring it over to the car and install it on the car. In fact, they plan to do applications next year. There's this magical convergence happening. They're also opening the platform It's just remarkable. And I am very happy to be associated with Ford, the only American auto company that didn't take TARP funds or whatever, the bailout funds. They are very forward thinking. They're really very active in social media. They're paying attention to this stuff. And I think that that's why Ford is I'm just thrilled to be driving an American car, and I'm really thrilled to be telling you about Ford Sync. Find out more. Go to SyncMyRidePodcast.com. Sometimes it's good to be proud to be an American, I got to say. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. And for those of you listening outside the U.S., it's great to be you, too. I don't mean it's not great to be you, too. I keep forgetting that this is really an international audience. But guys, our car industry's been dying. We're just happy to have one that's surviving and doing and thriving and doing well. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. All right, Jeff Jarvis, what was it you just were so excited about?
Well, coming back to the synchronicity of this, the Google is trying to, they always want to know your intent and anticipate your intent. And it's almost freaky that when you start typing in, their example was weather in New York in the search box, and it's pre-filling out the possibilities of what you're doing. It also says, I know what you want, and gives you the forecast right there in the search box. So the search box
becomes... Wait a minute. No, so this is if I go to Google.com.
Go to Google.com and search for weather in, you know, Chicago.
And by the way, that fade-in thing is weird. Okay, but Google, weather... Isn't it a little strange that the controls don't fade in till later?
Weather in...
And that's going to give me some choices.
Chicago.
It's fading in. Chicago. Right? It just had to fade in. I messed it up.
You couldn't even do a... It's not doing it.
Oh, there it is. Holy skamoly.
You haven't finished typing Chicago, and it's already given you the answer in the search box.
Whoa.
Forget the web page.
Yeah, we love Suggest. Suggest is awesome, but now Suggest is even more often awesome because it has images in it.
Right, so it's all about intent, and if it can know your intent, it's going to give it to you before you can friggin' ask.
And I can click this box, and it will give me more, and oh my gosh.
I had dinner this week at a Michael Wolff, the media columnist, played host to a dinner for Yuri Milner, the guy who invested in Facebook, for the Russian oligarch. It was fascinating. I got to sit next to the guy. Absolutely
fascinating. That was really interesting.
Oh, it was great. But he was talking about what happens in a world where you have a billion people, which is Facebook soon will, connected to a billion computers. And what does that mean for intelligence and intent and how things will anticipate your needs, not just answer them. And the power
notice
of that.
That an AdSense link also appears when you type the word weather.
I didn't see that, Gina. Good catch.
Wait a minute. Really? Yeah.
If you just type the word weather. Search box. This is incredible.
Oh, they're so brilliant. Look at that. The Weather Channel.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, that's
Wow. Is that an AdSense ad or is that a sponsorship kind of ad? Or did the Weather Channel have to buy weather? Why does weather come up?
They must have bought weather. Well, I'll tell you what. Let's just do a search.
Or do they buy this? Can anybody just buy that?
Actually, no. If you type in the word Lifehacker appears first, and we definitely did not buy that.
And I don't see, by the way, the Weather Channel on the sponsored links when I type in weather and hit return.
Yeah, that is not AdSense. If you type Twit, Twitter.com first.
Oh, I don't like that one pot cotton picking bit.
Because that now goes away from there.
If you do Twit.tv, you get Yulio.
Let me ask this. Is that evil?
Oh, I didn't buy that. That's not evil. But why is it linked and underscored like that? I didn't buy that.
Because it looks like it's just it knows that it's just
how is so it, why does it do that though instead of just the link below which says twit.tv? It says it gives the full title, the Twitcast Network with Leo Laporte.
But
then
do you buy the keyword?
No,
Twit? No. That's weird.
I'm not unhappy. I mean, I wish Twit would give me. But, of course, I could see why I'd go to Twitter. But as soon as I put a dot after it, it goes Twit. It thinks I'm going to twit.tv. That's remarkable.
Yeah, so, I would have thought it was a slightly evil if it was an ad, but now it's clearly not an ad.
Okay, now it's not. So, all right, Google,
this is like Google just becomes sentient. It's like, do you feel like all of a sudden this week, it just kind of, oomph, it became sentient, and all of this stuff is happening. Why? What happened at Google? Did it reach critical mass? I don't understand.
Now Google's the Messiah. The moment has come.
I feel like 2009 was just this incredible year for Google. I mean, they had that like focus on speed, which they delivered on. I mean, that just wasn't PR. I mean, Google has put out dozens of products and tools at this point that increase speed of the web.
Yeah.
And then
they're
and
right,
then,
by the way. Speed is everything. They're right. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't remember 2008 Google having a focus on a particular concept like speed, like the way that they did this year.
Right.
On speed.
It's like they had an offsite last year, and they said, "Okay, we're going to get
what
it together."
What should we focus on?
Speed. I mean, it's very interesting. I think the Google culture, you know this better than anyone, Jeff. The Google culture is kind of a non-traditional corporate culture. It's very committee-driven, which you would think would make it very hard to suddenly all agree speed is the process. I mean, it seems...
Well, but isn't it also, I think, just that Larry likes speed. Okay, we all like speed. Let's give Larry fast stuff.
Right.
And I think
so he has that kind of... There's still that leadership coming from the top.
Well, yeah, let me... I think it's a really, really good point, really smart point, Leo. I've worked in a lot of companies because I have a checkered resume and can't keep a job. But I've worked for mogul companies like Murdoch or Maxwell or Hearst or Newhouse. And I've worked for corporate companies like Time Inc., which are more ruled by task forces and committees. Maybe, just thinking about this as you say it, I think in a sense Google combines the two, where you have the committee filter structure. No, you got to go through this gauntlet to get there. But at the top of it is a mogul.
Right. A king. And, a king.
Yeah.
A monarch.
Or a junta, perhaps, in this case.
Yeah. But this is not a... This doesn't... Well, does it feel that way? All right. By the way...
Well, at some point, I've asked people about various things in the company, and the answer came back, yeah, we tried that, but Sergey didn't like it.
Yeah. Yeah, good, right. Because, you know, I trust Larry and Sergey. I trust even more than Eric. I think Larry and Sergey are magical, brilliant guys.
Yeah.
And I always trust a programmer and an engineer.
Same
more.
As Jobs. Yeah. So the irony here is, I hadn't thought of this before. I should have put it in the book. Right, that's what does... I said in my book, which I don't have with me to point right now, but that Apple was the grand exception. It did everything ungoogly, but in the end, maybe not so much like that. Now that you mentioned it, Leo, that having Larry and Sergey on top and having Jobs on top as visionaries all, that's what ties them together.
It's kind of the auteur theory meets corporate governance. I mean,
meets technology. Well, technology as a creative act.
By the way, they are listening, just so you know. Matt Cutts tweets, Jeff Jarvis, we think that's a useful navigational link. It's not advertising.
Yeah,
right.
I've been playing with it.
Looks like an ad.
But it's okay. And by the way, this is a fabulous book.
Thank
Speaking
you,
of ads, a fabulous book that everyone should get. What would Google do? What you now? You got to write a second edition, Jeff.
I know.
And the book is in its 11th printing. Congratulations!
It's 11th printing, I'm proud to say.
Holy cow!
Isn't that amazing?
Pretty cool. Thank you, Leo.
It's really great.
Like, that's my co-host.
All these triggers who are buying it, yeah.
How many books is 11 printings? That's unless
not as many as you think.
They're only printing 10 at a time.
Yeah, technology makes me able to, you know, they hit the HP button and it goes.
Right. That's neat. That's so cool. Yeah. Really, really neat. There's more changes to the front page. As long as we're on the front page of Google, a Google Chrome advertisement. Install Google
Chrome.
Yeah, I saw
that. Yeah. That you can click away.
And then you can click the X and I presume not see it again. That Droid ad must have done so good that they thought, well, we'll do more of that. That's kind of a change. The Google front page has changed quite a bit. To have this there is a little odd.
Well, you know, it's funny. They move pixels and we say, wow, it's changed a lot. You look at Yahoo and AOL constantly trying to remake themselves with their homepage.
Any other autocomplete magic that I'm blown away by what's happening there.
You know, I've just been experimenting with it, and it looks like it's really like a URL suggestion. So if you type in Tiger Woods with a space between Tiger and Woods, you don't get a suggestion. But if you type Tiger Woods with no space, it suggests tigerwoods.com.
So it's finding URLs.
This appears to act similar to the way that the Firefox, you know, awesome bar, you know, the
by the way, if you type Tiger Woods and look at the suggestions, this is exactly what you do not want to have happen in your life.
Yeah.
Car accident, infidelity, affair, accident, quick golf, accident update, wife, car crash, break from golf, house.
Leo, type in newspapers are.
Oh, I love these. I love it when we complete sentences. Newspapers are dying, dead, obsolete, underlined, not dying, written at what grade level, doomed, important, not dead, a waste of time. I love that. So much fun. I don't know who spends
Oh, don't type in Leo Laporte is. Don't do it. Don't do it. I'm telling you, don't do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to do that now.
Don't
oh,
do it.
No problem. Let's get on with the show and talk about some other things. Oh, how did that happen?
So, no, there's nothing for me. Actually, mine is worse. It doesn't suggest a thing for me.
It says Leo Laporte is an idiot. Leo Laporte is a douche. And then I don't know why Leo Laporte ISP. So are these, where do these come from? Are these the most searched? No, nobody's searching for Leo Laporte as an idiot.
It's not the search. It's the what it finds, the result. It's those phrases in the documents that it finds when someone searches for what you are.
Huh.
Jeff, yours is pretty good. If you type Jeff Jarvis, it suggests blog, Twitter, what would Google do? CUNY, Dell, bio, Jazz, Dell Hell, Wiki, and BLM. I don't know what BLM is.
How are you getting that? I'm not getting anything.
Well, if you just type in Leo Laporte alone, you get all the right things. Tech Guy, Twitter, podcast, blog, antivirus blog, Mike Arrington.
Yeah.
You're tied for life.
Yeah, forever we'll be tied together.
No, income. That's interesting, Leo. Income.
Yeah, yeah, that was because that was a big...
There's a story.
You know, we have a show called NSFW where that's a game that they play. It's really cool. They give you... They say, we're gonna give you the results, and you try to figure out who this is. Isn't that great? And then and then you have to compete with somebody. You should guys should go on the show. You have to compete with somebody and say, I could name that person in two results, or name that person in four results, or one result. It's really a fun game.
It's like the Google age of celebrity.
Yeah. No kidding.
So, Matt Cutts just sent us another. We got to have him on. You should call him. So if you type in a flight number into the search box... Yeah. It gives you the departure and arrival times.
But do I have to type the...
In the search box, not in the results. Just type in Delta 140.
Yeah, that's cool.
Oh,
so all you need is the search box. You don't need the web.
Yeah, try a JetBlue 182. This is the flight I always take to New York.
So you will know this one by heart. JetBlue 182. Uh-oh.
Oh, you're not getting it. That's weird.
I got it.
You did?
JetBlue, one word, space.
Oh, one word. Oh, there you go. Oops. JetBlue. You got to type it correctly. 182. Oh, yeah, there you go. That's great. No, but that's pointing to a non-Google site, flightstats.com.
And then if I hit I'm lucky, I go to flightaware.com.
Hmm.
Mysterious Google.
It is. It's so mysterious.
It's like a woman. I'll never figure it out.
Okay. I'm not making any comments on that one, no, sir. According to Google Maps, the Googleplex is for sale.
That one came from an 8-year-old blogger. Let's give him a prop.
Credit to Jake Smith. Wow.
Eighth grade blogger.
He says, do you have the money to buy the Googleplex? I wish I did because this place is truly amazing. Obviously, this is a joke. He went on Google Maps to the Googleplex. And for sale for a mere $100 billion.
$100 billion.
Do you think kids? This must be an activity these days. Kids go and search for stuff and see what they can find. Somebody's doing
hunting.
That. Somebody's doing that. All right. So we've got a Google phone. What else? What else is new? What other new Google products came out this week? Anything else we want to talk about?
You got some Chrome extensions. That was last week, wasn't it?
There's Speed Tracer. That's new.
Yeah, Speed Tracer is new. That's a Chrome extension. They opened up the Chrome extensions gallery this week with the launch of Chrome for Linux and Mac. But sadly, the extensions don't work for Mac, the Mac version. They only work for Windows and Linux. That's a bummer. But Speed Tracer is really something for web developers. It's really neat. It lets you monitor the speed of your site as it loads, and it creates all these like very cool dynamic graphs and shows you, you know, the Facebook JavaScript is taking too long or whatever. It shows you where you're kind of your it's a sluggishness graph. It's similar to YSlow for Firefox.
More new things. We have the fact that Google search results now include live results, though I can't get it to work from Twitter or Facebook at all.
Yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week. Yes.
Yeah, I can't get it to work. That's right. I'm sorry.
Real time.
Right.
Yeah, real time stuff.
Google Apps has added some collaborative features, which kind of brings it closer to Wave.
Including Google Groups, which is going to be my tool, but
yes.
We can do it now. No, I don't mind. I like Google Groups, and I kind of felt the feeling it was falling off the face of the earth.
So yeah, me too.
I'm glad that they've put it in apps. I think that'll keep it alive. Why did we think it just seemed like it was more abundant? And, you know, Yahoo Groups kind of faded away. And I use groups all the time. You know, my poker group, you know, has a group. I just use this all the time. And it's mm-hmm. so useful. Well, they've even redesigned it a little bit. It looks a little slicker and nicer.
Yeah, you know, Google Groups has a serious spam problem, honestly. I run all my software projects. I have a mailing list on Google Groups.
Do you?
And I have to keep them, I have to have them moderated. I have to moderate new posts to it because otherwise it'll just get killed with spam. And I think I complained about it one week to Matt, actually, on air. I said, hey, when's Google Groups going to work on the spam a little bit? And so I was really happy to hear that it's integrated into Google Apps because it felt like a renewed commitment to the product. And also this week, Google Wave kind of came out of the closet about their Google Groups integration, which a lot of users had kind of figured out that you can make groups of Wave participants using Google Groups. But Google finally came out and said, yes, you can do it this way. It's really tricky still. We're working on a way to make it easier. So it looks like Google Groups is here to stay. And I hope to see it kind of grow up and mature and maybe get a little better.
I think you're right, Gina. It survives if it becomes part of something like Wave.
Yes.
Yes.
It's a tool to that end.
Yeah, it becomes important. Mm-hmm.
The other important thing this week in my end of the world is Living Stories.
Okay.
Which,
what's that?
Google did in partnership with the New York Times and the Washington Post, and it's basically the topic page graduated to what it should be, which is that an article is surrounded by context. And full disclosure, Daylife, where my partner is working on something similar and has parts of this out now with what they call smart topics and smart sections. Living Stories. Basically, the problem with the New York Times topic page
is that
it's an attempt to get SEO, but it was a cynical attempt to just list their stuff. Whereas Google's saying, and Marissa Meyer's been telling news organizations this for a year and a half now, don't just make the article what you do, make it a page that's going to gather momentum and gather traffic and gather Google juice if you have the good reporting. And to do that, you've got to give more than just an article on the page. You have to give the context and the links and the timeline and the quotes and all this other stuff.
I love this. So you'll go there. It's at livingstories.googlelabs.com. You'll see some of the big news stories like Washington tackles healthcare reform. They link to the Washington Post for that, but then underneath it, now these aren't all from the Washington Post, or are they?
No.
They should be from other sources as well.
Right. So what this is a format that
This takes
Google's
me to a page.
They're going to give to the Washington Post and to other news organizations. Basically, they're saying, you fools, you don't know how the internet works. You keep writing articles, which are the artifact of print.
Right.
Here's what a news page should look like. Okay, we'll give it to you.
This is great. So is this in conjunction with, or is this, they're just doing it?
Google's just doing it with the Washington Post and New York Times to as a demonstration.
So the Times and the Post are cooperating.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, that's really neat. I really like that. That's a much better way to do news. And you know, I mean, you've got some, you know, Flash in here, interactive stuff. And I mean, just really, this is neat.
There's nothing surprising about this. Again, you know, Daylife has been doing this, not to plug them, for some time. But the newspapers couldn't get out of their old mindset of what they produced.
We're just putting the page, printed page on the web, of course. That's the really neat.
This comes at a time, too, when Google's trying to make buddy-buddy with news organizations. And so one could say that it's just an effort to do that, but I think it is, in fact, a helpful effort to get them to see the web in a new way.
So Eric Schmidt joined Twitter with the ridiculous eSchmidt0 handle. I don't know what he was thinking.
But he's changed.
Well, I think Twitter said, can we give you a better name?
I think Anil was one of the people that was like, hey, no one told Eric that Eric Schmidt that he didn't have to use his AOL screen name on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. So now he has Eric Schmidt. And yes, Twitter has verified the account. And let me just see how many Mr. Schmidt now has. 16,000 followers.
And he has 4 tweets.
And 4 total.
And he doesn't follow me.
What the heck?
I'm hurt. Eric, how could you?
You know, this is the guy who wrote the fabulous book, What Would Google Do?
And what's he wearing in the picture? It looks like he's wearing a bulletproof vest.
It does. Wait a minute. Or a bib. Wait a minute.
What's he wearing?
Let's zoom in on that.
It won't open the picture up for me.
Eric, what the heck? Why would... Okay, this is... I mean, who did this? His kids did this. Does he have kids? He must have a 15-year-old who said, oh, Dad, we'll make you a Twitter account, Eric Schmidt Zero. And then, and Dad, you got to have a picture. What about this one in the bulletproof vest? That is bizarre. So now he's Eric Schmidt, officially. I don't know what happened to Eric Schmidt Zero. And if you ever had any doubt, he's the man in the bulletproof vest. Or overalls. I don't know. It looks like Velcro on the front. I don't know what the hell that is. Why would anybody choose that? What is that saying? I don't know. That's very strange. What is that? Okay, chat room, what is that thing? Oh, this is when he was in Iraq. It is a bulletproof vest. It is a bullet. This was when he was in Iraq.
I think it's a bit of a wry sense of humor.
Yeah. No, this he went. Remember, they went to Iraq.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
When they announced the library. That's what that is. Thank you. Again, you see, my brains are better than Google goggles.
It's a billion brains and a billion computers. Look what it does.
Unbelievable. It's like a million monkeys. Google, will they buy
Don't
Twitter?
Call your listeners monkeys. Yeah.
In aggregate. Only in aggregate. No individual is a monkey. Just they're aggregated into monkeys. Google to buy Twitter rumor resurfaces. Nah, I don't know. Apparently, Jack Dorsey was at Le Web at a panel called European Gang Live and asked about the purchase of Twitter by Google. He responded, there have been no announcements. Oh, come on. This is Kremlinology again. But it's kind of interesting that he didn't say no. I don't know.
Well, the other interesting story that came out this week, too, in the Craigslist versus eBay fight, is it turns out that Google was also bidding to buy that 28% of Craigslist that was available.
Oh, interesting.
Isn't that?
Yeah. So who did get it?
How would it be different if they had?
Did eBay get it?
eBay got it, and now eBay and Craigslist are locked in a Japanese monster movie legal fight.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
Because Craigslist, as I understand it here, and I'm not sure exactly what it is, that the chat room will correct me, but I think that Craigslist accused eBay of using its position and intelligence to be able to create a competitor to Craigslist. eBay accuses Craigslist of changing its rules to dilute eBay.
Hmm.
And so it's not a friendly combination.
All right, we're going to. I think we've. It's been so much to talk about, and I'm sure that there's stuff we've missed. But I think we have to move along, otherwise Jeff's going to miss his pizza, and we hate for that to happen.
I'm down at Mom and Dad's in Florida tonight.
No pizza?
You see me behind me in the no pizza. No, we're having something off the grill. But Jake is down here as well.
Oh, how fun!
Yeah,
that's great. Maybe cool. Maybe conch frita.
Sun City Center is an amazing place. You have to be 55 years old to live here legally. The whole town. It's not just a complex. It's a town.
But, right? But people under 55 can visit.
You can visit and you can work here, but you can't live here.
That is wild. That is really...
It's like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah, no kidding. And is it...
My future, Leo.
Yeah. Is it a nice place? I mean, you like it?
Yeah, it's a nice place.
All right. Yeah, Yeah, that's the problem. I got to take up golf before I go down there somewhere like that. Let us get our tip, tool, and number of the week, starting with Gina Trapani and her tip of the week. You have many choices, Gina.
I do. There are many choices. And actually, this one is kind of a tool. Last week, we talked about how Google released Google Public DNS, which are public DNS servers that they say are faster maybe than your service providers. But if you want to know whether or not Google Public DNS or Open DNS or your other choices are faster, there's a free tool called NameBench, which you can download for Mac, Windows, or Linux. And basically, it benchmarks your DNS servers. So it takes OpenDNS, and it takes Google Public DNS, and it takes your service provider's DNS, and it just pits them against one another in a DNS server takedown and creates these charts and tells you which one is your fastest and best choice based on your browser history or the Alexa Top 100. It takes a little time to run. It takes a few minutes. You want to start NameBench and go kind of make yourself a sandwich. But in the end, you'll see, you know, what your best choice is.
My friend Steve Gibson, who does our Security Now podcast, has a very similar free product that you can run also that gives you a lot of information. In addition, it will put Google on there. And I ran it on my system. And Google's DNS was not that fast. I use OpenDNS, and that was by far faster. than Google's DNS. So it is worth running just to see what results you're getting, because as Google has said, speed is very important. But you can also get that one from grc.com. We'll give out both of them. That way you get to choose /DNS/benchmark. And it runs a very thorough benchmark. It's small because Steve writes an assembler.
Nice.
Yeah. It's 170K or something like that. And it's really, it does, it gives you really interesting results. It also tells you, which I think is valuable, if this DNS provider redirects 404s to its own page, which a number of them do, including OpenDNS, so you get a search result instead of this page not found.
Mm-hmm,
that may not be what you want, or maybe what you want, but it's a good thing to know. And you can add your own servers to that too.
Yeah, that Steve Gibson definitely looks like a good one. In fact, when I wrote about NameBench, everybody said, "Hey, you should look at Gibson's." Yeah. NameBench is
they're both free.
Yeah, they're both free, and they're both definitely, I think, worth looking at if you're not sure whether or not you should switch.
I agree.
Gina, is the time difference noticeable to the human eye and brain?
It can be.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it can be depending on your service provider.
People just use their ISPs, and there's a security issue with that because some ISPs are not fixing the bind problem that is a really nasty exploit. But you'll notice if when you enter in an address and there's a lag between the time you enter in that address and the time the page starts loading, that's DNS.
Right.
And I think we've all seen a lag there. I love OpenDNS. I'm a big fan of OpenDNS.
Yeah, if you see in your browser status bar where it says looking up example.com, that's the DNS call.
That's
purely
DNS. Okay.
Our number of the week for Mr. Jeff Jarvis.
All right. It is 1,661,463.210.
What is that? How many people live in Sun City? What is that?
It's how many seconds I have left. It's how many seconds there are left in the year. If you go to Google and just say, "I'm feeling lucky" with a blank box, it will come back with how many seconds there are left in the year. So, this is great. Right now I'm watching yours and mine on the same screen, and I see the lag of broadcast.
It's you can see the exact lag. Isn't that funny?
It's great.
So I presume that we should go there on New Year's Eve and watch it, because I imagine something wonderful will happen.
Ooh, a prize.
The homepage will explode and just become part of our browser, and that's it.
Google goggles everywhere. Something wonderful is about to happen. Actually, knowing Google, I just go to zero and say, okay, we're done.
I got to set up some sort of screen capture, because I want to be kissing a loved one at midnight. I don't want to be looking at Google's homepage, but I'll still be curious about what happens.
But we're going to a New Year's Eve party. I'm finding the biggest screen in that house, and I'm putting Google up on there, and I'm leaving it there. I mean, why not? You got the countdown. That's the perfect thing to do.
Back in the day when webcams were hot, I got a webcam at 4 Times Square in the Connie Nast building when I worked with them, pointed at the Times Square thing. And I remember Jake and I sitting at home doing screen captures of the web photos as it counted down and putting them up on the web, on a web page. It was so cool, man.
Aww.
We've come a long way. Isn't that father-son bonding? It's so sweet. So sweet. Has Jake found out about CMU yet?
No. I don't know what's going to happen there, but
my daughter finds out Monday.
Oh,
it's a nerve-wracking time.
Anxious weekend.
We have somebody in the chat room who has been bugging me, sending me emails saying, "You never mention this tool. This is my favorite tool on Google. Everybody should know about this tool." It's not a new tool, but it is a great tool. If you've used SketchUp, which is absolutely free, Google has created a building maker that is kind of based on SketchUp that allows you to create 3D buildings that you can then embed in Google Earth. And it's really cool when people have done this to go to these locations in Google Earth, and instead of getting you know how Google Earth kind of gives you pictures, they're 2D, you can zoom and stuff, but it's still kind of 2D. These buildings are actually like physical buildings. It's really, really neat, and it's free and it's fun to play with. It's called Google Building Maker, and probably easiest just to Google Building Maker. Because it's a long URL to find it. It's part of SketchUp. And you, of course, have to have SketchUp to do that, but that's absolutely free. But many, many cities, it's really fun to browse around in Google Earth and see these buildings. This is how it's being done with Google Building Maker. And I would like to give credit to that person, but I don't know what his name, but he was the guy who really wanted me to mention this. Google.com/buildingmaker. Okay, maybe it's not such a bad URL. Was it MXX? Okay, thank you, MXX, for the Tool of the Week. Also want to remind folks, I know many of you know that I wear Scott Evest clothing everywhere. That's the wonderful many, many pocket jackets and pants and shirts. I love Scott Evest, and we want to give you a little gift. They have Scott Evest merchandise with the Twit logo, but you can also get it without the Twit logo for 20% off if you go to scottevest.com/twit2009. It's not really an ad. We just like to do this every year.
How do you spell that way?
Our gift to you. Scott Evest. Scott Evest. This is great geek clothing, and I know Jake would love some Scott Evest stuff. Great, because you can put all your, if you travel a lot, you put all your stuff in your pockets and you walk onto the plane. It's just great. I love Scott Evest stuff. So scottevest.com/twit2009. We've got the beautiful Twit Army jacket, which is fleece, available. And as I said, 20% off all products, whether they're Twit or not, if you use the coupon code TWIT2009, uppercase, lowercase, doesn't matter, TWIT2009, on all of the products from Scott Evest. We're big fans of theirs, and Scott's a great guy. And frankly, I do this because I don't have to ever buy clothing. He just sends me clothing with pockets, lots of pockets.
I don't mean to compete with Scott Evest, but I just got to mention this because I think it's funny. Fred Wilson, the blogging venture capitalist at ABC.com, got off a flight one day, not too long ago, 2 weeks ago, and had to blog the fact that somebody had a hoodie that has a built-in neck pillow.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Isn't that a great idea? So you blow up your neck pillow and you just put the hoodie over and they think you're a comfortable terrorist.
That's a good idea until you're on a bus or something. You're driving around with a neck pillow. It's amazing, you know, what you can find in clothing these days. Gina Trapani is the best. We just adore her. And she is, of course, at smarterware.org. And her book, The Complete Guide to Google, is available at Complete Wave Guide. I'm sorry, Complete Guide to Google Wave is available at CompleteWaveGuide.com.
You got it.
One try before.
One of these days. But I know Jeff's book. See, it's easy. What would Google do? Jeff Jarvis is, of course, the great journalist at BuzzMachine.com, the author of What Would Google Do? Always fun, you guys. We really love doing this show. It's one of our most successful shows. We are now happy to say it is all on video available to you. If you go to twit.tv, you can download it. We are working on the iTunes feeds as we speak. Those will be out soon. All of our top five shows now are available on video and, of course, on the Roku box and everywhere else. But if you want to see Twig video, in fact, I think, let me just see if we have last week's show already up. You go to twit.tv and you'll see now you can listen to the audio, but you can also play the video for many of our shows.
Hey, Leo.
Yeah.
Will I be able to embed those things on my blog someday?
That's the next thing that we really want you to be able to do. And I think the key there is getting some help from Google. Anybody know anybody at Google? Because what I'm trying to get is a Google account that we could upload full length shows to. You know, they don't normally let you
do that.
At YouTube.
Oh.
And then we'd like to do that. We have no reason not to do that. We put all our shows on YouTube, and then you can embed away.
I'll email somebody now, but I'm sure Matt Cutts has already done so.
Matt, if you're listening, we have a producer's account, we have a director's account, we have all the different, but you have to get some sort of dispensation from Larry and Sergey or something before you can upload full length. I think they're worried I'm going to upload, you know, full length versions of Happy Days, but I'm not. I really am. I'm not. I mean, I'm really not. I'm really not going to do that. It'll just be Twitch shows. Everybody, thank you for being here. We will see you next week on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.